good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair in the Gene Bosch broadcast studio on the magical Isle of Vashon, broadcasting live, unrehearsed and unscripted all over the world, from Singapore on one side of the world to the Kingdom of Sweden on the other, of which Stockholm is the capital. Broadcasting as required by the Federal Communications Commission, if it still is in existence, 101.9 on the FM band, and streaming live all over the world on voiceofvashon.org. My greetings today go out in particular to all of Captain Joe's people who are standing by to cast their ballots on the 22nd of April, because that is election day if you live in a jurisdiction which is having an election here on the magical Isle of Vashon. We are having a special election. Now, I know that all of Captain Joe's people are registered to vote, and so then it means only that if you are in a jurisdiction which is having an election for you to cast your ballot. Here in the state of Washington, we can only cast our ballot by either mailing it in or dropping it off in a drop box. We no longer have any polling places, and I regret that, because not only did I enjoy going to my polling place in the precinct called Tahlequah, but I enjoyed especially going and talking to the people who manned the polling places to thank them for their attention to duty and to actually watch my ballot be sucked up into the voting machine. I have completed my ballot and will drop it into the drop box when I secure from our time together today. And I urge all of you who live in a jurisdiction which has an election on the 22nd to also cast your ballot in whatever form it takes, because it is one of the most precious, the secret ballot is one of the most precious privileges that we have in our republic, in our democracy. The medical list this week is once again a mixed one. First of all, Captain O'Brien and his lovely Lady Mary both have reported in with COVID. And a late entry is that Captain O'Brien reports today that he tested negative with the homebound test kit. Let us hope that, in fact, that negative report holds and that this is a short-termed one. For those who are recovering from such serious challenges, medical madness and challenges, my dear friend David is now in a rehabilitation facility where he will be treated for maybe as long as 2 or 3 weeks in order to get him back on full duty. My Master Chiefs, I hope for them that they continue to improve. I've not seen anything from them recently on the Coast Guard channel. But for all of Captain Joe's people, Dwayne in the Commonwealth of Virginia, continuing to improve. So the whole idea of the binnacle list is to channel and to focus the intense concerns of all of Captain Joe's people to all of my people who are on the binnacle list, so that they will continue to improve and then return to full duty. That's why we do it. That's why I mention them. And in my own case, The last event was on Friday. I had the last or the second of three of the Lupron injections. And again, the only side effect from that has been the fatigue, which kicks in at unexpected and sometimes inconvenient times. And I'm learning how to just push through that and keep on going, because I've got many things to do. I've got places to go and people to see and family to love, and I just don't have time to deal with all of this. I remain connected to the external plumbing, and in fact, a significant report on that is that I am hoping that all of this tariff business means that we're going to start manufacturing the components of the external plumbing here in America. I want to see that made in USA, because I am sitting here in the captain's chair in the Gene Bosch broadcast studio, getting ready to spend some time with you, spend my half hour with you, which I do every week, and a coupling disconnected. Well, Captain Joe, how do you know when that happens? Well, I know it happens because the first telltale is a little warm spot right over where the coupling is located. That tells me that it has become disconnected. It's happened a couple of times before, including on an airplane coming back from Florida in January. I've been dealing with this now for, 3 months? Almost 4 months. So I'm sitting here getting ready to talk to you, and I feel this warmth around the location of the coupling, and I look down, and sure enough, there's this little wet spot developing on my dark blue pants, my dark blue trousers. The next thing that happens is that it starts working its way down my leg, and then the next thing that happens after that is the white socks that I'm wearing inside my sneakers turns yellow. Melt no yellow snow anywhere near me. So, fortunately, I had enough time to get up, make a speed run to the head, make a quick damage control repair. I was trained not as a full-bore damage controlman, but I at least know the commands, and I do know now how you reconnect this thing at least temporarily, and that's what I've done. So, the next big event is on the 17th of April. We're going to pull Mr. Foley again and see whether or not I can, to use the medical expression, void on my own. And if I can't, I know how to travel with it. I know how to maintain it. And we'll just keep on going. And we'll just keep on plumbing. I had a call last night from an Ingham shipmate. And this is an officer who came to me partway through the deployment. I had to send one of my officers back to the States halfway or partway through the deployment. And Dick was sent to me to be his replacement. He came to me from another ship that had been on the gun line. And he turned out to be a wonderful shipmate, and we reconnected just a year ago after a many years hiatus. And we reconnected again last night, and some of the memories came flooding back. It is one of the great treasures of my life when people with whom I've been to sea make the effort to find me. Sometimes they do it through the voice, as a matter of fact. And friends in other ways from many years ago who have found me through the voice of Vashon. And apparently what they do is that they type my name into a search engine. I've not done this for myself. I'm not at all sure what it would turn up. But in any case, one of the things that comes up apparently is my connection to the voice of Vashon. And so a number of people have found me that way, and we have reconnected in a couple of cases after many years. It warms the cockles of this captain's, your captain's, black heart whenever that happens. And reminds me once again that I am the most fortunate of men. So Dick was reminding me of some of the things that happened when we served together and sailed together. He, of course, was also a messmate in the wardroom when I was XO. By the time I became her captain, he had been transferred to another assignment. And so we never sailed with me in the cabin and he in the wardroom. He was one of my messmates when I was XO, which I was the president of the wardroom mess. It was lovely to hear from him. The other contact that I had was from my granddaughter, the Jules. The Jules is now living in South Carolina with her partner, Brad. And she sent me a completely unexpected signal yesterday, and she said in this signal that she had been talking to some people who wanted to talk about the Shackleton story. And apparently they knew, maybe these people knew that I knew a little bit about the Shackleton story. And the Jules came to me and she said, I know almost nothing about it. What's going on with the Shackleton story? Which takes me to the book for this week. It is a book which we have had before, and we are going to have again. And it is Carolyn Alexander's book called The Endurance. And Carolyn was working on this book when I was working to build the Shackleton Memorial Library in the Scott Polar Research Institute in the University of Cambridge. And so I met Carolyn. But she was busy on her book and I was busy building a library. And so we only were ships that crossed in the night. But one of the things that came from her contact with the Scott Polar Research Institute, hereinafter I will call it SPRI, S-P-R-I, was that she worked with Bob Hedlund, who was the keeper of the collections and also was my academic supervisor when I did my master's degree. And I went into, after I had had this signal from the Jules in which she was asking for information about the Shackleton story, I went into into Carolyn's book and was reminded that April in 1915, Shackleton was able to land all of his people, all of his crew, on Elephant Island. Parenthetical insertion here, Elephant Island is not named for a animal. It is named for HMS Elephant. There was, at that time, when the island was named, there was a ship in the Royal Navy named HMS Elephant, and that is for whom the island is named. Shackleton was able to get all of his crew onto Elephant Island, and they then wintered over there. And that happened in April of 1915. In April of 1916, on the 9th of April, 1916, in fact, tomorrow is the anniversary, Shackleton and his colleagues launched the lifeboat James Caird that they had modified to make the voyage from Elephant Island to South Georgia. And the trip was made so that Shackleton could organize the rescue of the rest of his crew from Elephant Island. And that, of course, is what happened. So the book this week is Carolyn's The Endurance. And I take this time to memorialize both in April of 1915 and April of 1916 the events that happened in this month. And maybe that is what stoked up a little pun there, because Endurance was a coal-fired ship. And so maybe that's what stoked up the Jules friends in coming to her and asking her, and she asking me, and I have now sent her a long piece of traffic with some information and recommending that she go, first of all, start off with Carolyn's book, The Endurance, and then move from there into Shackleton's own account, which, of course, is called South. I'm running out of time, and I have several other things that I want to and I'm going to get to, but I was going to tell a story about Shackleton's granddaughter, the Honorable Alexandra, and I will save that for a future time. But it is a story that involves the Honorable Alexandra. It involves your captain. It involves Dr. John Heap, who was my director at Spry, and for whom I built the Shackleton Library. And a peripheral little side story also involves my Mary R. But that's not going to happen today, because I am going to talk about a couple of other things that get added on to things that we have talked about before. This next one has to do with the Panama Canal. There's been a lot of talk about whether we, the United States, the United States government, should exercise our ability under the treaty in which the Panama Canal was returned to the government of Panama under the during the Carter administration, as to whether or not we should exercise some of the capabilities that are listed in that treaty, with the idea that somehow or other the Panamanians are not being good stewards of the Panama Canal, and therefore we can in some way exercise more firm control over it. One of the things that happened as a result of that particular threat was that the C.K. Hutchinson Company, which is a Hong Kong company, which is now, of course, part of the People's Republic of China, has had the contract for managing the ports at Balboa and Cristobal in the Panama Canal. Not the canal itself, but the ports which support it on either end. And an American investment company called BlackRock has made an offer to buy most of the port facilities that Hutchinson maintains. And those, and that would include taking over the management of those two ports. The canal itself, of course, is operated by the Panama Canal Authority, which is part of the Panamanian government. So we're talking about the two port facilities. We're not talking about the canal itself. In the meantime, there is, of course, a challenge to this offer. It's working its way through the Panamanian courts, and eventually the Panamanian Supreme Court is going to rule as to whether the BlackRock offer is a legitimate one and whether it should be allowed to go into effect. All of this has an effect on us. And I hope that it is managed in a professional way and not in a politically emotional way, which seems to your captain to be what's going on right now. I have been through the canal a number of times, two different ships. I have told my stories of at least one story of one pilot that I had here on this broadcast. But in the larger sense, in the geopolitical sense of the world, the Panama Canal performs a necessary and vital service for the rest of the world. And to have it threatened by anybody in either direction is alarming to me, and I don't command in that particular area, but I do express my concern. I want it to remain open. I want it to remain as we agreed in the treaty, turning it back over to the Panamanians. They have done a fine job, and they have, in fact, enlarged the locks on the Pacific side. So I will keep on top of it and will keep reporting on it because it is a matter of some concern and great interest to me. The Corps of Engineers, which has the responsibility and owns the locks in the United States and has responsibility for maintaining them and has the responsibility for dredging, often with their own dredges, often with dredges under contract. But those ports where dredging is required, and the Port of Seattle and the Port of Tacoma are not one of those, we have the great advantage of one of the most beautiful and well-operated deep-water ports in the world. But those ports, like Baltimore, a port with which I'm very familiar because my Northwind was home-ported there, and then farther south in Chesapeake Bay, my Unimac and Reliance were both home-ported in Yorktown. Chesapeake Bay is a dredged port. Delaware Bay is a dredged port. And the Corps of Engineers is responsible for that. And the story of the Corps of Engineers and as part of the United States Army is a very interesting story, and it's beyond the time that I have left today. But I bring it up today because the Corps of Engineers is building a new dredge. And they are building it in Eastern Shipbuilding. Now, what ship do you suppose is also being built by Eastern Shipbuilding? It is my next Ingham. It is my hope, it is my wish, and it is my desire, and it would certainly be my command if I still had anything to do with shipbuilding in the Coast Guard, which I did at one time, that Eastern Shipbuilding not divert their attention away from the Coast Guard cutters that they have under construction. Argus, the lead ship of the class, a name that goes back to our beginnings. Spencer, a sister to my Ingham. And now the latest Ingham, under construction at Eastern Shipbuilding. I don't want them to become so fixated on building this dredge for the Army Corps of Engineers that their attention is diverted away from Argus, Spencer, and in particular, my Ingham. Because my Ingham, the next one, is going to be the recipient of a piece of steel from my Ingham. Speaking of pieces of steel, Bollinger, Bollinger, icebreaker builder, not going to get into that today. Bollinger is the yard which is building the fast response cutters, which are turning out to be, at least for the first years of their lives, very successful little ships. First commands for lieutenants. What a wonderful way to begin your command career, command at sea, with one of these ships. I bring this up because I just mentioned that some steel from my Ingham is going to be incorporated into the hull girder of the next Ingham at Eastern Shipbuilding. Some steel from the World Trade Center has been brought to Bollinger, and there are two fast response cutters that are being named for people who were Coast Guard reservists and who were also first responders and lost their lives in the attack on the World Trade Center. These two ships are going to, each of them have incorporated into their hull girder a piece of steel from the World Trade Center. Now, whether they got this idea from us and what we're going to be doing with Ingham, or whether they got it from the, believe that USS New York, a ship that is, I think she is an LPD, a landing craft, a large landing ship, steel from the World Trade Center was incorporated in her as well. But it's a great and a custom which, of which I am particularly happy and proud to be a part. And I'm particularly delighted that a piece of steel from the World Trade Center that was so, well, that was attacked in on 11 September is going to be incorporated into these two fine ships and is going to be providing an inspiration to the young sailors and the young captains that will man them. I am just delighted to have that particular story. The Huntington Ingalls Shipyard, which is formerly the old Newport News Shipyard, been around for a long, long time, has entered into an agreement with the Korean company Hyundai Heavy Industries. And I bring this up in the last minute that I have with the optimistic hope that this is going to provide some ship yard space for the construction of icebreakers, because that's where they should be built. They should be built in a shipyard which is able to handle and is accustomed to and is experienced with all different kinds of steel and large ships. And with that, I'm looking at my large watch, and it is telling me that we have all too quickly come to the end of our time together. I didn't even get to the properties in England that we're going to buy. So next week, we'll talk about that and other things that I didn't get to. This is your Captain Joe. As always, I am. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And as always, I remain on station and watching properly.